Well, if you have a Bible with you or you can swipe to one, we're going to be in Mark chapter 5 today. And if you don't have one, we'll have some of the verses on the screen. But we're going to spend some time in a bunch of stories, but one story in particular in Mark chapter 5. And last week we began this preaching series called Paralyzing Questions, as I mentioned earlier. And we're really camping out for about 5 weeks on one particular story in the life of Jesus Christ. And it's this moment where Jesus heals a woman who's been bleeding for about 12 years. And through the lens of this particular story, we're looking at all kinds of different things. We're looking and exploring questions that are often really hard to understand and often really hard for us to answer. And if someone were to ask us, it would kind of make us feel a little paralyzed. So last week, Ben, our other pastor here at Jamestown Harbor Church, he opened up this conversation. And he led us into a conversation about doubt and understanding the role doubt plays in our faith, and that it's not something for us to be fearful of, but yet the very existence of doubt and the need for us to ask questions is central to who we are as we try to follow Jesus. And so in the coming weeks, we're going to be talking about the Bible, we're going to be talking about heaven, we're going to be talking about a lot more things. Let me turn that off so that does not bother you guys through my microphone. But we're going to be talking about all kinds of really big questions when it comes to faith. And today, we're going to deal with the idea of religion. I know it sounds super exciting, right? But religion seems to feel like kind of a dirty word these days. Culturally, it's far more accepting for us to be spiritual people than religious people. You know, perhaps we equate the idea of religion with a bad experience that we had as children that did not leave us feeling connected to God, that did not leave us feeling hopeful or even loved. Perhaps we equate religion with extremism or fundamentalism, or we read the news or the history books and we see that religion has been used to point to all kinds of negative things in our world, whether it's been used to justify crusades or tearing apart immigrant families, as it's been talked about even this week, right? Many of us have negative connotation with the idea of religion, and so we're going to deal with that. Because it turns out, Jesus kind of does too. So we're going to go back to the story in Mark 5, and my ask for you today is to give me your brains a little bit. I know it's hot. I know there's probably plans this afternoon for you to deal with around Father's Day. But for at least the next few moments, I just want to invite you to work your mental muscles with me, because we're going to be following some things that I think are super interesting, that when we take a look at the story through different lenses, we find out lots of different things. So we're going to read a few verses of this story. We read the whole thing last week, and then I want to fly a little bit higher above it and take in the context of this particular story. So here's Mark chapter 5, starting at verse 24. A large crowd followed and pressed in around him, that's Jesus, and a woman was there who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years. She had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and had spent all she had, yet instead of getting better, she grew worse. So one of the things I love about the Bible is that when you actually slow down and read through it, you find stories that you can totally relate to. I know some of us in this room have had these experiences of, instead of getting better, we grew worse. And there's somebody in the Bible that actually experiences that. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, if I just touch his clothes, I will be healed. Immediately her bleeding stopped, and she felt in her body that she was freed from her suffering. So that's our story, right? There's a woman. She's got a problem. She's been bleeding. She's tried everything, and it always comes up empty. But then she comes up behind Jesus in a crowd. She touches his clothes, and she's healed. That's a story. If you've been around the church maybe a little bit in your life, you may have heard that story before. But here's something that I would invite you to do when you read or when you hear stories in the Bible. Ask questions like this. Like, what lines, what words, what phrases just stand out to me? What jumps out to me in particular in this story? What words stand out? Don't just rush on. The goal of reading the Bible is, it's not a speed contest, right? It's not about how much you can read. Because it's been my experience that when there's something that just kind of pops out at you, there's a reason why it's popping out at you, and you should hang in there for a minute and figure out what's going on. So that's usually the best place to start when you're reading the Bible. The next place to go is to ask context questions. So, okay, this is the story I'm reading. What happens before this story? What happens after this story? Where does this story take place, in a particular like town or a village? Are there other things that have happened in the Bible that have happened in that same place? And start to draw those threads and look at the bigger context. Is there something maybe that the first century culture who experienced the story would experience differently than maybe I would, right? So what's the context? And we want to put those two ideas to work on this story. And let's start with what stands out. To me, one of the things that stands out when I read the story is that she touches Jesus. Right? She reaches out and touches him. It's an interesting detail to me. She's healed by a touch. Right? She's not healed by lightning bolts from the sky. She's not healed by angels. She's not healed by magic words. She's healed by a touch. That feels interesting to me. It becomes even more interesting when you start to think about context around the story. When you read the book of Mark, nearly everyone who encounters Jesus and is healed by touch. That's interesting. If you look in Mark 5, 41, just a little bit after, the story directly following this, says, he took her by the hand and said to her, Talitha koum, which means little girl, I say to you, get up. Jesus took a girl by the hand and healed her. If you go a little bit before that story, Jesus meets someone with a highly contagious skin disease, and again, he heals them with a touch. A man with leprosy came to him, begged him on his knees, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Jesus was indignant, which also can be translated as deeply concerned. He reached out his hand and touched the man. I am willing, he said, be clean. Immediately the leprosy left him and he was cleansed. And then in the same chapter, in Mark 1, Simon Peter's mother-in-law is sick. And we read that Jesus went to her, took her by the hand, and helped her up. The fever left her. So when you notice something, a detail that stands out, and then you explore a little bit more of the context, yes, Jesus meets a woman who is healed with a touch from Jesus, but it's not an isolated event. This is happening all around Jesus. A lot of people, a little girl, a man with leprosy, Peter's mother-in-law, and this woman, all have these experiences of healing that are about touch. Something about touch we should probably be paying attention to in this story. But this isn't the only detail that stands out to me when I sort of look through this story, right? We are told that when the woman reaches out and touches Jesus, she does it kind of sneakily, right? She sort of sneaks up to him in a crowd and reaches out and grabs his clothes and then immediately tries to like hide and feels, uh-oh, something happened here and I gotta hide. And so Jesus has to go, well, who touched me? He can't see her. And so she trembles with fear after she touches Jesus. Why? These other stories actually don't have that same experience. Jesus reaches out, touches the hand, it kind of goes kind of smoothly, but in this one, she's afraid. Something is causing her fear. So why does she sneak up? Why is she afraid? And what does that have anything to do with her being sick in a crowd? Now again, if we zoom out, right, if we take some context of the Bible, you discover Jesus touches a lot of sick people all the time in the Gospel of Mark. But it's not just sick people that Jesus interacts with. In chapter 1, Jesus heals a man who has an impure spirit. Right? We often kind of refer to this as casting out a demon, but Mark particularly says someone with an impure spirit. So what does that mean? What does it mean for a spirit to be impure? What does purity have to do with anything? In Mark 7, a couple chapters later, Jesus has an argument with the religious leaders of the day, these people we call Pharisees, because Jesus has been saying some things about food in particular. Food that the religious laws have declared impure. So there's that purity thing happening again. And Jesus says, a person is not defiled or made impure by what goes into them, but by what comes out of them. And then immediately following that, Jesus goes to a foreigner, someone that the religious teachers would say that is a person who is considered impure because they're not Hebrew, they're not Jewish. And then Jesus goes and he feeds 4,000 foreigners, more impure people, and then casts out another impure spirit out of a boy. So, observation number one, Jesus heals a bunch of people by touching them. Observation number two, who Jesus touches seem to have some things in common. It's a lot of impure people. And that word comes up in Mark again and again and again. So there's touch and there's purity. And those two things are happening really at the center of this story. Touching and purity matter somehow here. So now is our job to go, okay, well, why does that matter? We've noticed some things. We've pulled it apart. We've looked at some context of things. If your brains are working, you're tracking with us. What does this have to do with religion, right? All right, well, we're getting there. If we take those ideas, purity, touch and purity, and we just look at the context of the whole Bible, it turns out that this stuff comes up all the time, specifically in the Old Testament. Jesus is hanging out in the New Testament, but all in the Old Testament, you hear all kinds of conversation about touching and about purity. Notice this particular conversation in Numbers chapter 5. The Lord says to Moses, "Command the Israelites to send away from the camp anyone who has a defiling skin disease or a discharge of any kind or who is ceremonially unclean because of a dead body. Send away male and female, like send them outside of the camp so they will not defile the camp where I dwell among them." The Israelites did so. They sent them outside the camp. They did just as the Lord instructed Moses. So this is smack dab in the Old Testament in a part of the Bible that Hebrews call purity laws. There's a lot of rules around purity. Numbers gives three different kinds of things that make people impure, right? Number one, having a skin disease makes you impure. Number two, having a bodily discharge makes someone impure. Number three, touching a dead body, right? All those things make somebody impure. And God says, when that happens, you gotta kick them out. They gotta be outside of the camp, which at face value seems to remind us why we don't like religion. Because it feels kind of cruel. Here's a person with a problem, and our response is to put them outside of the community. Kick them out. Get them out. But you got to understand context. The people who are hearing this law were not you and I. They didn't understand the things that you and I understand. They were slaves for thousands of years, and they have never had to make decisions on their own. They've always had someone who was telling them what to do. They were slaves living in a desert. They weren't near hospitals. They weren't near medical treatment. They didn't know anything about disease and parasites. They had no idea that diseases spread. And that if somebody had this disease in their camp out in the desert, it would be bad for everybody. So if I told you I was sick right now, you would not be eager to shake my hand, right? Like, we sort of get this. Diseases spread. And so Numbers 5 says, send away from the camp anyone with a skin disease, a bodily discharge, or who's touched a dead body. Why? Because it's probably going to make everybody sick. If you play with a dead carcass, you're going to get sick, and then your family's going to get sick, because disease spreads, impurity spreads, and then the whole camp gets sick. So the book of Numbers gives us very clear instructions on how to keep our camp healthy, how to keep people connected, because this was not a permanent law. Your job was to go out while you were sick, and then there's lots of rules about how to come back into the community when you're well again. God never said, kick them out and leave them out. God said, keep the community healthy. Bring them together when it's time to do that. So religious laws. At the core of religion is something good. It's something designed to help make a community better, help people stay together. It was a good thing. But at the time where Jesus is speaking and engaging and where he had this moment with this woman, what began as a series of good religious laws turned into something else. And that's what the culture Jesus was living in. Rules became more rigid, More laws were put on top of other laws. Laws became more restricted, more exclusive. And at this time, the kind of laws and interpretations that the Pharisees put on top of things like Numbers 5 basically never let anybody come back to the camp. If you were impure, you got kicked out and you stayed kicked out. They took things a little too seriously. They forgot why those rules existed in the first place. That the religious laws existed to help the camp stay healthy and to help people come back into it and be connected. They forgot that. And maybe that's been an experience you've had in a religious setting, right? A bunch of rules that nobody remembers why we even did these in the first place or what good they were when we created them. There's a great story about a church who every Sunday morning at the end of the worship service, everybody would stand up and they would sing the same song. But when they sang it, they would turn around and face the back wall when they sang it. And then after they sang a couple verses of the song, they would turn back to the front and they would sit down and they would close the service. Which, if you are part of that community, at some point just made sense to you. But if you were a guest, you had no idea what was happening, right? And so at one point, a guest finally asked somebody, so why does everybody turn around when we're singing the song? And they didn't know. So they started asking around and nobody knew. Finally, they found like the oldest member of the congregation and said, why do we do that? And this older woman said, I know why we do that. Because when we first started singing this song at the end of our services, the words were printed on the wall behind us. So everybody had to stand up and look at the wall behind them singing, right? And at this point, they had painted over a bit. Everybody had known, you know, the words at this point. Now we have this cultural rule that's in place and nobody knows why we do it. That's what Jesus is experiencing in his life at this time. They had put a whole bunch of ways to follow these purity laws. And in the years leading up to Jesus, if you were considered impure or unclean, it became virtually impossible for you to be part of the community again. You're out. You're always going to be out. You're unclean, you're contaminated, you're dirty, you're impure. So again, what started as a good and healthy set of guidelines to help people live in peace and harmony became twisted and disordered. And it actually kept people away from each other. Which brings us back to this woman. This woman who has been bleeding for 12 years, who sees Jesus in a crowd, who reaches out and touches his cloak and immediately becomes fearful and hides. She's been bleeding for a long time. Blood is a bodily fluid, which means she is impure. She is unclean. Which means what? She's supposed to be on the outside. Outside of the village, outside of the camp, outside of the community. She's not supposed to be in a crowd of people. I can imagine her just feeling fearful just being in the presence of all of these people. But again, remember why these laws were put in place. Because they understood. Disease is contagious. And so she reaches out and she touches Jesus, a religious leader, a rabbi. Why was she so afraid? Because in the eyes of the law, she just contaminated Jesus. She just made him unclean. She just gave him a social death sentence to kick him out of the camp. You see how a little bit of context suddenly puts new light in this whole story. But remember the other stories around this story? The context about impurity and touching. Who does Jesus touch? Jesus touches a leper, someone with a skin disease. And then in our story, he touches a bleeding woman, someone with a bodily discharge. And then immediately after that, he touches a little girl who has died, a dead body. Jesus touches three people in this section who are specifically impure by how the religious laws state it in Numbers 5, the same categories, and he touches them in the exact same order that Numbers 5 puts out for us. It's almost as if Jesus is walking along, going through these experiences, knowing people are evaluating him based on religious law. These people knew these laws, they operated by these laws, and when they saw this very specific set of actions by Jesus, they went, uh-oh, what's he doing? What's he saying? What is he trying to get people to see? I think Jesus is observing. And he's saying, listen, when the whole religious system says your uncleanliness will make me unclean, your sickness will make me sick, your impurity will make me impure, Jesus says, that's not how this works. He says, my health will make you healthy. My cleanliness will make you clean. My purity will make you pure. My holiness will make you holy. Jesus, you've got it all backwards. You don't have to be afraid that disease is contagious. My purity is contagious. Which I think really, really matters to you and to me. Because I don't know about you. I don't know what you're bringing in here today. I don't know what kind of experiences you have in life, but I spend plenty of time feeling like I'm on the outside. I spend plenty of time probably feeling like this woman. I don't have a skin disease, but I feel like there's something about me that people would look at and say, when I experience that, I don't want to be around that person. Right? Maybe you do too. Maybe there's this circle of connection that you feel like everybody else lives inside of, but you're over here. That there's something inherently true about you that keeps you over here instead of in this place of connection. That you feel like you yourself are on the outside of the village. And maybe if that's you, you find yourself staying away from God, right? Because you think all the religion around God will reinforce that feeling. That there's so many religious laws and customs and things to pay attention to that I can't handle it. And so I already feel like I'm on the outside. Coming closer to God is just going to reinforce the fact that I belong on the outside. And I think that if that's you, you are missing out on a God that doesn't do that. You are missing out on a God that reaches out when we are on the outside. You're missing out on a Jesus who says, your disease will not make me sick, but I can make you healthy. You're missing out on a God who wants to reach out and touch you when you feel the most disconnected and the most unlovable. A God who will reach out and embrace you when you feel compelled to be on the outside of the village. You don't have to fear a religion that will separate you. Or you don't have to feel a faith and fear that you are not going to be good enough. You get to embrace a relationship with someone who reaches out for you. Again and again and again, Jesus reaches out and he touches someone who belongs on the outside. Rather than advocating for religious practices, Jesus is advocating for relationship. He's asking people to reach out and connect, and he says, this is the way, this is the kingdom that I come to bring. Relationships, not religion, is what's going to change our world. It's going to bring us back to what those original religious guidelines were meant to do, help us live in harmony and peace together. This woman has been outside of the camp for more than a decade, cast to the outside of her culture. She's been living in lonely places. She's terrified to be in the company of other people. And Jesus does what Jesus has always been doing in this gospel. He touches her. He reaches out. And you know what he says? He calls her daughter. I don't know where you stand with Jesus. Some of you here today would claim I'm trying to follow Jesus, and some of us here today would say, I'm not so sure how I feel about that. I don't know how that fits in my life. But if you are staying away from Jesus because you think you are unacceptable, because you think you are impure, you're not. You are the person he calls daughter. You are the person he calls son. Doesn't matter what you're bringing to the table. He says, I'm reaching out for you. If you know nothing else about Jesus Christ, know that you are the person he wants to embrace and bring into the camp, not keep on the outside. You may have seen in your bulletin, we're having a baptism Sunday coming up in August with all of our campuses at Camp Geneva and Lake Michigan. And the reason we do this is because these are the moments where we embrace that truth. Where we embrace the truth and finally accept the fact that God is reaching out to embrace us. And I need the moment in my life where I look back and I say, that's still true. That was true then, and it's still true today. And baptism is a moment for us to solidify that in our story and say, I don't care what the rest of the world tells me. I don't care what I tend to think about myself. I know what God thinks about me, and I mark that in my life. So let me give us just a few takeaways before we're done here today. And the first is this question. What does it mean for you to follow Jesus? If we are followers of Jesus, if we're these kinds of people, then our goal is to be like Jesus. That's our invitation, right? To be like Jesus. And our culture says sickness is contagious. Impurity is contagious. Don't let it touch you. But Jesus, the person we try to be like, reaches out and he touches the sick. And he says, it's my health that's contagious, that needs to spread. So how are we living like Jesus? Do you walk into your office on a Monday morning and in a place that might feel anxious or cynical or sarcastic and it allows you to start living and speaking and feeling that way, right? Or do you make the place where you work a completely different kind of tone because of the light you bring into the world? Or when you come home from work, do your kids sort of go, uh-oh, dad's home, right? Or do they come home and say, oh, all right, this is about to get good. Dad's finally home. What are you spreading? Does sickness and unhealth rub off on you? Or does your health and your impurity and the joy of following Jesus Christ change the room you are in? So that's question number one. What does it mean for you to follow Jesus? Question number two, takeaway number two, what's your posture in your camp? What's your posture in your camp? Are you a person who works really hard to keep the impure out? Do you work to find ways to keep people who are undesirable out of your life, out of your neighborhood, out of your country, out of your camp? Are you a person who says, they're undesirable, they can't come in? Do you follow the religious laws of not in my backyard? And maybe that's something we do unintentionally. Are you isolating yourself from people who you would claim are impure? Or are you embracing them? Are you finding ways to reach out and touch people that the rest of your culture would say, we shouldn't touch them, we shouldn't engage with them? Are you actively engaging with the impure people in your life? Are you reaching out to your neighbors, to the people in the schoolyard? It's a hard one for us, right? This is a hard one, to engage with people who don't feel and look and act and seem like we do. It's natural for us to keep some people on the outside of our camp. But if we are following Jesus, then we need to allow this story to challenge the way we think and live. The community Jesus creates is not based on religion. It's based on relationship. So we need to practice that too. Last week, Ben gave us permission to be uncertain, right? To ask questions and to experience doubt, to not have all of it put together, to not have all the answers, but to reach out instead. Today, I want to give us the permission to let go of the need to focus on the rules and the religion of it all, and instead to realize that God is reaching out to us. To realize that you can't get this wrong. You can't get this wrong enough where God will withdraw and stay away from you. Jesus is not interested in your religion. He's interested in your relationship. And he's gone to such great lengths to keep you in the village, to keep you in the camp. That's the God we follow. That's the Jesus we get to be like for others as well. Let's pray together. God, I am thankful today that you want me in the camp, that you want me in relationship. And God, I confess that I don't feel that way most of the time, and that I listen to my own internal fears and monologues and statements about who I think I am. And God, I, like this woman, want to reach out, but I'm so afraid that I'm going to get kicked out, that I'm not going to be accepted. So God, I pray for each and every one of us that deal with that same truth and that same reality, God, that we would feel you reaching out to us and inviting us into the community and to belong and to have belonging. God, I pray that we would feel and realize that you have been there the whole time just asking, who touched me? I want you on the inside. I want to call you son. I want to call you daughter. Don't run away. God, help us to reach out, realizing that you are also reaching towards us. In your son's name we pray. Amen.